listening to Talking Hoosier Baseball, a podcast by fans from the iubase.com website for anyone wanting more info on Indiana University baseball. Today is Thursday, January 31st, 2019. I'm Casty Palmer, joined by Master of the RPI, Carl James, and our resident baseball mind, Josh Bennett. Talking on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Please subscribe and leave a review on your favorite platform. Also, keep a lookout for new content on iubase.com, including a recap of the winter media session by iubase.com writer Max Heath. Today, we have a real treat. For guest is a pitcher currently at the AA level with the Richmond Flying Squirrels in the San Francisco Giants organization. Ryan Halstead is here with us on Talking Hoosier Baseball. Thanks for your time and willingness to join us tonight, Ryan.
Yeah, thank you guys so much, man. It's a pleasure to be out here for sure.
So Ryan wore number 34 for the Hoosiers. He guesses of any Hoosier to ever take the mound at 105. Their saves tops the list as well. He owns the top two spots in season saves outright with 11 in 2013 and 10 in 2015, and he's tied for the third spot with 9 in 2011. Ryan had a career 3.4 ERA with a 2.59 ERA his senior year. Over his career, he struck out three times more batters than he walked, and it jumped to nine times as many strikeouts his senior year. That senior year, he struck out 33% of the batters he faced and had a whip of just 0.96. Ryan's IU career also included three trips to the batter's box with one hit and a run scored to show for it from a game against Bucknell in 2013. He also picked up the W by striking out two batters in the bottom of the ninth. So far as a professional, Ryan has a 3.19 ERA and 146 appearances with 20 saves. He struck out a quarter of the batters he's faced and has a whip of 1.18.
All right, Ryan, we've had several guests on Talking Hoosier Baseball so far, and a lot of them have come since the most recent coaching change, and it's one of those facts of Indiana baseball that we've kind of gotten used to having a coaching change every now and then. But you got to go through one yourself between Skip and then moving on to Coach Lemonis. What were your thoughts and memories of going through a coaching change, and what kind of advice would you give to the guys today?
Yeah, it's funny. I was kind of actually thinking about that today, especially with kind of the guys who are there currently. It's tough at first because you don't really know what to expect, obviously. It was different for us kind of because, you know, we had that year where we went to Omaha. We were so successful. And we kind of, you know, as a collective unit, we kind of figured, you know, coaching change might occur just because, you know, given our success and, you know, we were figured, you know, Schwarber was leaving, you know, Sam was leaving. So, you know, we figured that we might get a new coach. And then when it kind of solidified that we were going to, we were kind of ready for it. I think so, you know, speaking for myself, and I know a couple other guys, we would always talk about it. So I think in that sense, we were kind of expecting it. So we were more ready than maybe, you know, it wasn't really out of the blue to us in a sense. So, but you know, it's funny because, you know, it's crazy how smooth it went. Cause you know, we play Louisville a bunch, especially the, you know, those last couple of years that I was there at IU, you know, we played, it's funny cause we kind of, I remember Coach Lemonis was the third base coach at the time, and he was wearing, he's actually wearing Cheese Bros jersey, and a couple of us were like, you know, we were chirping him a little bit, you know, talking the whole game and not talking trash, but just kind of wearing him out a little bit. And then, you know, all of a sudden now, like, you know, you look at the hire and it's that staff. So it's like, it's kind of funny, you know, when that staff landed, it was actually them, but at the same time, you know, they came from a decorated program in Louisville. They won a ton of ball games, especially, you know, the times that we were IU and we competed against them. You know, they're always competing for championships, you know, as were we. But, you know, having Lemonis come in, you know, and Kyle Bunn and Kyle Cheesebro, you know, they had a great chemistry themselves, you know, given the fact that, you know, Bunn and Lemonis had those Citadel ties, you know, already. And, you know, Cheese have been, you know, coaching with Lemonis, you know, at Louisville. So it, you know, it was a really smooth operation, I think. You know, and I'm really grateful for those guys because, so I was injured and I was coming back, and I was through my rehab, and I was actually on the beach with my family, and I got a call from, that was the first time, Coach Lamona called me, and, he actually called me, and he, you know, we talked for about 20, 30 minutes, you know, and I could just, you know, I already got a good vibe that he's a great guy. But he actually, you know, he went out of his way to not only call me, but tell me that he was going to grant me back my scholarship that I, it was kind of up in the air at that point because, you know, we're going through a coaching change. And, you know, it was kind of in his mind, it was like a no-brainer. So for that, for not even meeting the guy and for me to kind of interact with him on the phone and for him to genuinely, for me to hear his voice and have him genuinely care about me and my future there at IU, kind of, you know, just fired me up just to go in and get back to work and get ready to, you know, win some ball games for him without even, you know, seeing him face to face. So it was kind of a different scenario in that sense. Just the fact that, you know, it already, like, just like I said, like just something, you know, it just like lit a fire in me to where I was like, yo, like, I can't wait to go compete for these dudes, you know, because Coach Bunn called me too, actually, I want to say a couple of days later, and it was the same kind of conversation. So I'm always being debt to those guys, grateful for everything they did for me and the opportunities they created for me after IU, for sure.
So Ryan, you were a California kid at the time, and Midwest baseball really wasn't a thing when you committed to come out here. And I'm sure there were a lot of cultural differences and just a completely different ballgame. So can you tell us a little bit about how you ended up here and why?
Yeah, for sure. I've been asked this question so many times in my career at IU and from pretty much every student that I had and, you know, interacted with, you know, why are you out here in Bloomington, Indiana? You're from Southern California, you know? So I always give everyone the abbreviated answer, but kind of, you know, my path to IU is so different and so unique. It's kind of honestly crazy how the stars aligned and how I got to IU, because so many things had to fall in place. I had to, you know, so many things had to occur, and you know, people had to, you know, connect and meet with each other, and for me to go through that whole thing, the fact that I even ended up at IU, you know, when, you know, I was in high school and geographically not even knowing where Bloomington was, you know, the fact that I ended up there is crazy. So I'll kind of dive into it just off my head. So yeah, I was in high school. I was a hitter at the time. I only pitched, I want to say, about like 6 innings in high school. So I was never really a pitcher in high school. So it was going into my senior year. I had committed to a small NAIA school, Azusa Pacific at the time. So I committed to them. Local school, you know, close, you know, great institution, you know, great academics. They were NAIA at the time. They're Division II now, but they were always, you know, competing for a championship. So they had a lot of great talent, you know, a lot of dudes get drafted out of there. So I committed there. Senior year went on. You know, speaking of Azusa Pacific a little bit, a guy named Sean McCory was the pitching coach at the time. He's the one who recruited me. And, you know, I'll always be grateful for him because he was kind of a guy who really, you know, instilled confidence in myself. You know, he was always a guy who told me how projectable I was and how, you know, I'll keep growing in my body and do that. So for that, man, I always hold him high in my regards, because he was always a guy who was advocating for me. But flash forward to end of senior year, I end up, one of the only times I pitched in high school, I pitched against this dude named Scotty Frazier, who was, at the time, you know, he's a big time prospect. I actually grew up with him, travel ball, you know, playing with him. He was a pitcher who was like, you know, low to mid, you know, touched upper 90s at the time. So he was a legit, you know, had big league stuff. I ended up pitching against him, and they were, you know, there were a ton of scouts at the game watching, you know, obviously watching him because, you know, he had a ton of hype going in the drafts, you know, as he should have, because he was, you know, a polished pitcher. You know, I threw well, you know, I was never a guy who was like, oh, you know, how hard am I throwing, you know, velo, like whatever. Like, I was literally just a kid, you know, okay, yeah, I'll go chuck a couple innings. You know, I had no idea. what I was kind of doing out there. You know, season ended. This is now, it's June now, so the draft is going on. Obviously me, you know, no expectations of getting drafted whatsoever. You know, I committed to APU, like I'm going there, you know, I'm just hanging out at my house with my family. And I get a call from, this is the last day of the draft, so I get a call from Tim Kostick. He's the scout that ended up drafting me for the Houston Astros. He calls me and he's like, "Hey man, how's it going?" I'm like, you know, good. Like, you know, I'm just like hanging out, not really knowing what to expect. He's like, "Yeah, we're probably going to, you know, take you in these next couple of rounds." So, I mean, for that to even happen was kind of a shell shock for me, because I didn't even, you know, it was completely something out of the blue. And, you know, to get drafted even as a pitcher, and like I only threw like, you know, 6-7 innings maybe in high school, was crazy to me. So I ended up getting drafted. That kind of built upon, after that, I get a ton of calls from like California schools, you know, asking to come on visits or whatever. And, you know, for me personally, you know, so my mom's from Seneca, Oregon, like a 200 person town. My dad grew up in West Virginia. So I'm super like, moral wise, I'm like super grounded. So like something in my heart told me I really wanted to branch out and get out of California and go to a school, not only to a bigger school, but to a school that, you know, had those same kind of ties to it, you know, whether it be in the Midwest or Southern. That's kind of where, even though, you know, I didn't do any research because I already committed to a school, so I didn't really, you know, but just somewhere like, you know, in my heart told me I always like belonged at a school out there. So my dad actually owned a gym here in Rancho Cucamonga. So I was working out there. It was like a local, there's some scouts there watching some like local high school talent that throwing bullpens or just hitting or just doing whatever, right? So they're just hanging out. A scout named Denny Henderson for the Cubs actually approached my dad. He's like, "Yo, you need to go to this guy in San Diego, pitching coach. He's like a guru. He's like, you know, tell me all this stuff about this guy." And I'm like, "Yeah, dude, let's do it. Like, whatever." Like, I hadn't had pitching lessons in years, you know? So I was like, I need to, you know, take this serious, you know, if I'm going to be a pitcher. So we go out to this guy, his name's Dominic Johnson. We go out to his house, it's in Poway, San Diego. It's like this super old, kind of like oldish, older vibe town, like, you know, white picket fences everywhere, like just local shops, like super low key. We show up to his house and if anybody else who's been to Dominic Johnson's house can attest to this, like you show up and you're like, "Am I at the right place?" Because you get out and it's like, it's a driveway up this house, right? And you go into this backyard with like dogs running around and like chickens in a chicken coop. And like you walk and there's like these two mounds. And like you turn the corner, and I turn the corner, I was like, "Is this serious?" And then I turn the corner and there's like 30 dudes there waiting to throw a bullpen, right? And like, I like recognize like guys who are in the big leagues currently, you know, a ton of minor league guys. I'm like one of the only high school guys that's, you know, there. I was like, "Geez, dude." You know, I throw my bullpen for him and, you know, he's like, "Hey man, yeah, you look good. Are you looking to go to a bigger school?" And I'm like, "Actually, yeah. You know, I'm open to whatever. I would rather, you know, I was thinking a bigger school, like maybe, you know, like Big Ten, Midwest, or like a Southern school, like SEC maybe, or something like that." And he's like, and he started laughing. He's like, "You know, one of my good buddies, Tracy Smith, is coming up next weekend to watch some local talent. If you want to come out here and throw a bullpen for him." I'm like, "Yeah, sure. I guess." So next weekend, I throw a bullpen for Tracy. This is like on a Saturday. I throw a bullpen for him Saturday. This is still in San Diego. I go to San Diego, throw a bullpen for him Saturday. He's like, "Yeah, you want to throw some hitters tomorrow?" I'm like, "Yeah, sure. Drive up again Sunday, throw some hitters." He watched me, obviously. After that, asked me if I wanted to fly out and take an official visit to IU. And so just to give you a timeline, this is like late July, early August, right? So school starts August 20th, I want to say, something like that, like welcome week, right? So, I fly out to IU. No one's on campus, right? I go visit. First of all, I get off, you know, Coach Neal picks me up, you know, takes me to sample gates. I get out, you know, I walk around the campus, and I knew I was going to commit, like, you know, just before, I didn't even need to walk around, you know, whatever. You know, go back to California, sign my letter of intent, like, express ship it back, and I show up to IU, like, 10 days later with a suitcase and flip-flops. This is a kid from Cali, just not even know what he was doing.
So six innings pitched in high school, and you end up being the Indiana saves leader. That's a... That's an interesting trip.
Yeah, man, it's crazy.
So can you talk a little bit about why you decided to come back after the draft for your senior season?
Yeah, obviously, you know, junior year, having that incredible run that we had, you know, being with, you know, that core group of guys that we had, you know, was just, you know, probably the most fun I had playing baseball that year. You know, 2013 was crazy, man. So this was, we actually decided, Tracy brought us in before postseason started and kind of talked to guys who he thought were going to get drafted. And he kind of just wanted to see where our head was at. And, you know, at that time we didn't really know because, you know, we were just like, I don't know, man, you know, because we were still, you know, making that run. So once it actually happened, it kind of got more realistic that it was an option that we could not come back for our senior year. So the craziest thing about it was, you know, me, Slagers, and DeMuth all being roommates, all got drafted by the Twins. So that made it even harder, you know, because we're all drafted by the same team. So, you know, it's like, dang, dude, like we could all sign and we could all play in the same organization together, you know, and be roommates again and do what we did and just keep, you know, keep it going. Or, we, you know, we could just take a step back and, you know, get realistic about, you know, our opportunity and what we need to do, you know, as individuals and what's best for us. So I knew Slagers was going to sign because, I mean, he, you know, given the fact that what he'd been through the couple of years before that and for him to, you know, throw so well, man, he just absolutely shoved that year. And for him to do that and then get drafted as high as he did, you know, it was a lock that he was going to sign, which he should have, because he deserved it. He went through so much adversity to where, you know, I knew he was going to sign. You know, DeMuth was still up in the air at that point. I didn't know kind of where his head was at. I talked to Jeff Pohl, the scout that drafted all of us. And I kind of got, you know, I was realistic with him. I was like, man, I got drafted in the, you know, 26th round, you know. I got one more year left to get a degree, man. I'm, you know, most likely I just really want to go out and finish my degree and just, you know, get that piece of paper that says, you know, I graduated from Indiana University, because the university means so much to me, you know, and it was going to mean so much for me to just graduate from there, from that institution. So I kind of knew that when I got drafted, I knew that I was going to come back pretty soon in my mind. I didn't really need to talk to my family or anybody else about it, because I kind of knew just deep down, I kind of just wanted to, you know, come back. Plus, given the fact that we were going to have, you know, Sam and Schwarber were going to be juniors that year, and that whole class, you know, Hart, Soika, all those guys, you know, we're going to be, you know, coming back, especially after that year that we had, we're going to have so much more experience coming back, and we're going to be so much, you know, so seasoned in that moment. In those, you know, high intensity moments that we went through, it's going to feel like, you know, as a collective group, it would feel like nothing to us. So I really, you know, that really played a factor too, because I knew I was going to come back and I really wanted to get that national championship, man. And I really thought it was realistic for that team. And, which is another reason, obviously, like I said, why I came back, because, you know, that was definitely in the cards for us. And that's where, you know, our vision was as a group, and like, as a team, we're like, yo, like, we're gonna get a natty this year, like, let's do it, like, let's. And then I think that whole vibe kind of, you know, it took Dustin a little bit longer to realize, obviously, because he got drafted higher than me, definitely. But, you know, it was just tough because, you know, it's, you know, you're turning down an opportunity to, you know, chase the dream that you've been dreaming about since you were a kid, you know. And it's tough because you can look at it both ways. You could be like, okay, you know, we went to Omaha, you know, this is the perfect time to go sign and go away and, you know, do whatever and take on my next passage in life or in baseball, you know, because, or you could be like, let's come back and, you know, try to win that national championship and try to push this team even further. So there's so many sides to look at it. And it's just so hard to, it's so hard to compare because, you know, it's just so different for everybody because, you know, so many different factors go into a decision like that because it's life changing. So, you know, I was at a point where I got drafted lower than both those guys. So it was, you know, they really had to take in consideration, you know, they were, it was like real money that they were getting. So like I was, you know, I was going to sign later. So like, it was easier for me, like I said, because, you know, I would just come back, finish my degree, you know, finish out one more year at IU. So it was never really hard for me to decide to come back just in the sense that my situation was so much different from those guys, you know?
Well, now that you've made the leap finally after a couple more years to the professional ranks, can you talk a little bit about the transition from being an amateur player to being a professional player?
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's just like anything else, man. It takes time to accustom yourself to the culture and to the lifestyle of what you're doing. It's a lot different, man. It's a lot different. There's so many different things about it. Being in a organization, you know, whether it be the San Francisco Giants or any other baseball organization, it's different in the sense that there's so much depth when you're talking about talent. And you're not only talking about, you know, kids in America, you're talking about, you know, kids in these Latin American countries. You know, you got kids from Dominican Republic, you know, Venezuela, you know, I've played with so many kids from all over the place. So Cuba. So like, there's so much people, like kids nowadays, they don't realize how much depth when talking about talent there is in an organization and how competitive it is day in, day out, every outing, everything. So in that sense, it's crazy. That kind of, it took me a while to get used to that because it's like, it's hard to wrap your head around, you know, like this kids who are like 16 years old throwing 100 miles an hour, you know, it's like, geez, you know, you're like, what did I get myself into? But at the same time, it really, you know, I love it in the sense that, you know, it's basically all on you. So you have so much time to invest in yourself and invest in your craft and invest in everything else that you have control over. And you're able to, you know, spend so much time on yourself and bettering yourself and getting every facet of, you know, pitching and baseball so much better that it's just in that sense, I love it, man. It's so awesome. But, you know, obviously it's way different. You know, we have 140 some game season, you know, not counting spring training, the months that we're in spring training. So it's definitely a grind, man. But, you know, I never complain because that's what we signed up for. So it's to be expected. It comes with, you know, the territory for sure. But, you know, it's different in the sense that you have so many more games and you have to take care of your body. You know, you have to, you know, mentally be strong. You have to do so many other things that you didn't really have to do in college, because, you know, those last couple of years at IU, being a Barkoffin, man, we were pampered there. It was awesome. You know, great facilities, great clubhouse, getting pregame meals, getting catered to, which, you know, hats off to the university and all the staff there for who took care of us that well. It's awesome. But it's definitely a change at first, but it takes, you know, it takes a little bit of time to get used to, but I love it, man. I honestly do. I love it. There's so many things you can complain about, or there's so many things that you could say you hate, but at the same time, all those things kind of, you know, you could just use those things to keep building upon and keep writing your story. So I love it. I love every second of it.
So what are your winters look like now? What are you doing over the, you know, before spring training hits? How are you preparing yourself for spring training?
Yeah. So, you know, off season for me, is just more, it's filled with a lot of training and a lot of just preparation for the year. coming up here. So like I said previously, my dad owns a gym out here in Rancho Cucamonga, where I'm from. So, which has been, he's owned it for about 13 years now. So it's, I've basically been living there since he opened it. So, you know, ever since I was like, you know, junior high, high school, it's like my second home. So, you know, I'm blessed enough to be able to be able to train at a facility like that. Every off season, I could go in there, you know, 1, 2, 3 times a day. Sometimes I'm in there too much. But I love it, man. It's also connected to a PT place. So, you know, which is perfect. I could just train, get my throwing in. And then if I need any PT to any maintenance on my arm or body or whatever, I could just hop right over there and get a massage or, you know, get treatment done. So it's like, it's kind of like, it's like a shining light for me, because it's like, it's all these things compiled into one that I absolutely need. And it's so close to me. And it's just been awesome for me in that sense. And it's, you know, I've been able to stay connected with the community, you know, and just help him out with whatever he needs. So I'm usually, honestly, I spend a ton of my time there, man. Just, you know, training, do what I got to do, you know, helping out there. A couple, you know, other jobs here and there, but you do what you got to do to kind of scrape some money in the off season, you know, do what you got to do. But I spend a ton of time there at that gym, helping them out and doing whatever. But it's low key, man. I'm in Rancho, so it keeps me out of trouble. I don't do much, honestly. I just stay low key and just try to get as prepared as I can for the next season.
So as a fellow IU alum, I know that there are always things over the time you're there that stick out in your mind whenever you think back about IU and while you were there. So for you, what were some of those moments on and off the field that stand out?
Oh, Cassidy. I could go on for hours.
Yep.
But I think what I'm going to do, I'm going to start with saying some of, you know, my teammates, some things that stand out, like performance of my teammates, and then I'll maybe dabble into my own performances and then maybe some off the field stuff. But God, off the top of my head, I'm trying to narrow it down. You know, one of my favorite moments, you know, as a, being a spectator and watching the game, was watching Donato throw in the College World Series against Louisville. You know, just obviously Joey, you know, since day one, been the Friday guy, you know, being lucky enough to be in his class and be with him throughout his career, and, you know, to experience all of his outings, you know, but, you know, I could talk about a ton of his outings, but I think for him just to go out and do what he did against Louisville in that moment, and especially in that first game of the College World Series in Omaha, when we had so much, you know, naysayers and people like talking how we were just, you know, we weren't going to live up to the hype, and for him to just, you know, hush everything and just go out there and just absolutely dominate and kind of set the tone for us there. That was, and I was actually the last inning, I was actually warming up in that game. And I was like, I remember I was like half warm. I was like, nah, Joey's got this. Like, you know, I just like relaxed. But, you know, he's such, obviously, one of the most decorated pitchers in Indiana University history. So, you know, like I said, just to be around him and those performances that he always had, man, it's just, you know, it's hard to explain. It's just kind of Joey being Joey. You know, he just does what he does. He goes out there and does his thing on Friday and just chills the rest of the weekend. It's just what he's always done. But that's one of them. God, let me see another one. Another thing, I think, so I was hurt at the time. Was I hurt? I don't know. I forget, but I know. So I know Slager's pitched. This is when he was healthy, obviously. It was in Nebraska. And he threw a gem, and he got a standing O from the Nebraska fans. That was up there for me too, as a player, obviously being Slager's roommate and watching him have to deal with those two injuries for those couple years and not being able to, you know, be with us as a team, and to see him do that, especially at Nebraska's place, you know, with Nebraska's fans who are just known to, you know, talk a little trash, which is fine because I love trash talking from fans. It's great. But to see him do that at that stage and for them to give him a standing O meant so much to me for him because, you know, he, like I said, he overcame so much adversity, especially that year alone. And to do that, you know, at an opposing team's place and get a standing O is like, dude, that's gnarly, man. That's sweet. That was awesome. JC's catch, obviously, was probably one of the most unbelievable things I've seen in person. The ground he covered, the initial jump off the bat, just being aware enough to throw back in to get to double that guy up and end that inning, because I want to say that was like the second inning, right? And that home run would have tied the game against Austin Peay because those dudes were hot. So I think that kind of deflated their whole surge in that regional. So that was a huge, huge, huge play for sure. God, that regional. I mean, how could I not talk about Chad Clark's walk-off, you know? Like one of the most, we call him Chad Clark Baby Man. So Baby Man's my boy, man. He's a beast. And, you know, I was pitching. And then, you know, when he made those errors the inning prior, and then he ended up coming back that following inning. And God, I want to, that rally started. I know Basil got on, and then we had two quick doubles from DeMuth and Casey. And then that guy hung a slider, and Baby Man put it out. But, and that closer was having an incredible year too. So for us to do that, that was one of the most incredible games I've ever been a part of. And just to experience that firsthand was honestly crazy. Like it was one of those games where that happened. You didn't even know, you didn't even think it was real. You know, you didn't even know what to do. You're like your body left itself. You know, you're just like, is this really happening right now? But, those, off the top of my head, those are like, those kind of stand out with me, just like seeing just stuff, you know, seeing teammates ball out is so awesome. I love that even more.
Well, you were a part of quite a few pretty impressive games in your IU career. We're going to call out a couple more of them. I'm going to go a little bit more recent, which would be the start of the 2015 Maryland series, when it was Maryland was a ranked team. You guys went to College Park and swept them. And in that first game, the team, you know, beat Mike Schwarren, who was 10-0 up to that point. And it was a little dicey there. And you came in the eighth, shut him down and finished that game out.
Yeah, I do remember that. That's actually funny you say that, because I remember before that series, so I was playing catch with Efros, and you know, we were playing catch together, and we got done warming up. We're like, dang, went up to each other, like, yo, I feel good today, man. He's like, yeah, I feel good too. So, that day, we both ended up, that was the game, that was on Friday, when we faced Warren. We both ended up going in that game, and you know, we're able to get the dub, and you know, that's all that matters. But yeah, that was, you know, Maryland's a good environment. It was definitely cool to, you know, it's always fun to face a team that gets a lot of hype, because it just makes you, you know, want to beat them that much more always. So that was great to play them, especially at their place. I love going on the road and coming back with dubs. So that's always a positive for me. I love that.
So the game that stood out to me was also from 2015 season. It was the game against Long Beach State. You made your 100th appearance. You're the first Hoosier ever to reach that triple digits. You earned the save with two innings pitched, three Ks. So when you were in that game, were you aware of that milestone leading up to the game? And if so, did that add any extra excitement coming in?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I've never, my whole career, even up to this point, I've never been a stats guy. So I've never, looked up, you know, a stat sheet after a good or a bad outing. And like, oh, how did that affect me? So I've never really been that kind of dude, because, you know, I feel like the more, you know, I do that, the, you know, the harder it is to keep performing day in and day out. So I'd never really been that kind of guy, so I honestly don't even think I know that happened. But it's funny though, because so Chris Squires, who had that record before me, he actually kept in contact with me throughout my career, because you know I was kind of close with that the upperclassmen when I came in as a freshman. I was kind of close with those guys, and he was a part of that. And he was always used to give me crap. He's like, yeah, he's like, you might get the save record, but you're never going to get my appearance record, bro. You're never going to get it. And I was like, I mean, probably not. Like, you know, obviously I don't know. That was after my freshman year. So I was like, you know, probably not. That's a lot of appearances. Cause he was a horse, you know, he was a guy who always, you know, every single appearance, you know, went out there and never complained and always went out and, you know, did his thing, you know, whether it be any role that he was in. So, you know, for that, I was there longer than him though. So, I don't really count it, but, you know, it's awesome. I think it's just to get to that point, you know, you have to be, you know, trusted by a coaching staff, and you have to be at a place that, you have to be at a place that puts you, in games to succeed. And, you know, if I would never have gotten that many appearances if we didn't have, you know, the starting rotation that we had all those years, or the offense that we had all those years, or the defense that we had behind us. So, you know, so many external factors go into that, you know, into, you know, records, because, you know, it's like, I would never be able to do, you know, all those things without all those guys, you know, because, you know, that's how we always kind of operated. You know, we operated as a unit, and we always built off each other, you know. Harrison or Efros could easily, you know, probably, you know, been in the same position, but, you know, we never complained. We just, you know, the roles that we were in, we just like, all right, just give me the ball. Let's go compete. You know, we never cared about anything like that. It was just more of, you know, team success and helping each other. And we love to see each other succeed, which is, you know, it's pretty rare to find a collective group like that.
So how are you able to, you know, with all that you do now, to stay connected to IU and Bloomington after all this time?
Yeah, you know, it's tough for me because I live in California, so going out to Bloomington is kind of a trek. And given the fact that I go through a 6-month long season. But you know, I usually like to show face at Bloomington at least once a year, man. You know, the past couple of years I went to alumni weekend. I always like to go out there, and reconnect with everybody, you know. I usually do that. This year was kind of different because Dustin ended up getting married this year, and he was getting married in Indianapolis. And, actually me, Slagers, Will Nolden and DeMuth, we all went to the wedding, obviously, but we caught a game. It was this year. It was Marquette, when Marquette came to Bloomington and played. So we all went to that basketball game and got to just, you know, chill, and we had good seats, and we just kind of just enjoyed the game and enjoying the environment. But it's so nice to go back and reconnect, you know, with dudes like Rusty Stillions, Colby Stillions, you know, guys who just take care of us, man. You know, I got to see Will Ali, our strength coach, get a workout in, you know. So it's just little things like that. You know, I just love it. Indiana, you know, it means so much to me that I love to just always continually, you know, whether it be once a year, twice a year, just, you know, reconnect and go back there and show some face and, you know, just do what I got to do just to let them know that, you know, how much, you know, it still means to me personally, because Indiana has given me so much as an individual. I just love to, you know, show love and give back the way I can. But, you know, it was cool this time because we didn't meet Merce, but we met the rest of the staff, you know, very welcoming. It was me, Slagers, and Nolden that went in there and met all of them, you know, very welcoming. And I'm, you know, excited for these guys, man. Got to meet a bunch of the new guys there on the team currently. So I know Feynman, I know Pauly, I know Justin Walker, Matt Lloyd, Scotty Bradley, a couple other guys. But besides that, it's all new faces. So it's kind of weird going back and not really recognizing everybody. But, you know, I really, you know, I take pride in going back and just, you know, just talking to those guys and be like, you know, whatever you need, you know, reach out if you guys need to talk baseball or whatever, you know, about, you know, anything you need. Just don't be afraid to reach out and, you know, shoot me a text, give me a call, whatever. So in that sense, I love to go back and do that and just reconnect with some of the guys and just, you know, just kind of check in more than anything. It's a long trip, but man, it's worth it every single time. Bloomington's like my second home, man. So I love it.
So Ryan, we had a chance to talk to your former teammate and pretty close friend, from what I understand, Kyle Hart. And he, you and him had the same situation, unfortunately, in 2014. And he had mentioned that it was nice to have you to lean on during that time. Unfortunate for both of you, but maybe fortunate for him and maybe you, for you to be going through it with someone else. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, for sure. You know, that injury was a huge, huge event, you know, in my career, because, you know, up to that point, I'd never been seriously injured, you know. So it was, you know, something that was completely foreign to me in that sense. So I, you know, I didn't know how to attack it or how to approach it at that time. But I think, you know, before even diving into that, what helped me so much through that process and through that injury was, you know, I was roommates with Slagers 2 years prior to that. So he was hurt both those years. And, you know, I saw kind of the trials and tribulations that he had to go through and the frustration, you know, and it's, you know, for me as a teammate and his friend, it was so hard to deal with, because I was like, dang, dude, like, you know, it's so tough to miss out on those trips, you know, to miss out on all these things. And it's just the most frustrating part about it is just out of your control, because you're not healthy. So you literally can't do these things. So, you know, I was always there for him in that sense, just to like talk and for him to vent a little bit and us like, you know, talk things out. So that helped me so much when I had my injury. So I was, you know, I was not that I was prepared for it, but, you know, I kind of knew the steps to take on the mental side more than anything. So, you know, it was super tough, man, because, you know, it was one of those things where I turned down the draft to come back for my senior season, and for me to get hurt on the opener, you know, it was heartbreaking in a sense, because, you know, that season meant so much to me. You know, I had dedicated so much time, you know, preparation, you know, whether it be, you know, on the mound, in the weight room, like I was so ready for that season, you know, like we're gonna do it this year. So for me to get hurt that home opening game, it was tough, man. And you know, one of the hardest parts about that thing was, you know, once it happened, I knew I, you know, blew my knee out for sure. You know, I knew I was going to be out for the season, but for me to kind of roll around a little bit, and then for me to look in the dugout and like kind of look in the stand, and like you could hear a pin drop, like you couldn't hear anything. And like for to see like the expressions on my teammates' faces, like, you know, like they seen a ghost or something, you know. So like seeing that more than anything, and then just, you know, seeing that was so tough for me to overcome at first, because it was like, it felt like, you know, although it was out of my control and I obviously didn't, you know, put it on myself, like I felt like I let them down in a sense, you know, because I was like, I'd taken ownership of being a leader in a sense, you know. So it was like, I felt like I let them down as a teammate. So it was hard for me to overcome, man. And that entire year, just doing that grueling rehab, it was a grueling process, but, you know, I was able to, I really took it upon myself, you know. I made a deal with myself that I was going to come back, you know, better, bigger, faster, stronger, you know, more conditioned than I ever was. And I really took that serious. So I worked really hard in rehab, man. I dedicated so much time to kind of balance, you know, balance not only, you know, going to class, but, you know, my rehab. And then on top of that, you know, still throwing is just probably probably shouldn't have been doing, but I was still like throwing like on my own, like in the facility, like at 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night. So it was like, it was, but in that sense, it was more me just getting, you know, trying to get all those demons out, you know? So just finding something that I could do to, just to, you know, release, you know, all that kind of inner anger that I had, because, when you go through, you know, a season ending injury, you know, especially it was tougher because it was the home opening game. When you go through a season ending injury, man, it's like, it's so many thoughts run through your mind, you know, and it's easy to blame a lot of other things, but, you know, I'm a big believer in everything happens for a reason. And, you know, it's something that was totally out of my control. So at the same time, you know, I came to terms with it. I accepted what happened, and, you know, I made a deal with myself that I was going to come back the following year for my team and do what I could to, you know, get some more wins. And, you know, it was tough. It was obviously very tough to sit, you know, on the sidelines that entire year. And, you know, for how that year ended was tough. Because all those dudes, you know, a lot of those dudes that left that year were, you know, they're my boys. Like, and they were a big reason why I came back. Like, we were all, you know, we were all family. So that was tough, kind of letting that go, and then me going into the next year. So it was, that was a little bit harder for me to accept. But, you know, like you touched on earlier, it was, you know, for me and Hart, you know, we were in the same exact situation. So, that made it way easier for us to kind of, you know, vent a little bit and talk about our situations and kind of push each other through rehab and like try to beat our timeline to when we were supposed to come back and come back, ready to go. So that helped a ton to have him through that whole process. And, kudos to everyone at Indiana who helped me through that to get back ready to go for that next year.
Well, at this point now, with after the time you spent at IU and as a professional, you've been pitching for a long time. How do you progress and keep it going year and year and try to get better?
You know, I think that the injury that I had was really a blessing in disguise, because I came back after that injury a better pitcher than I ever was. You know, when I got hurt, you know, we had Kelser at that time who threw so well for us that year. And he had still to this day, one of the most unhittable pitches I've ever seen on a baseball field, that spike curve that he threw. So through my injury and through my rehab process, you know, I would always pick his brain to see like how he threw that pitch. Cause I never had a genuine, go-to off-speed pitch in my career before my last year at IU. So I knew I needed to kind of reinvent myself as a pitcher and come back and add a couple more weapons in my arsenal in that sense. So I really picked his brain when it came to that. And, you know, throughout my whole rehab process, I was always, you know, I had a baseball in my hands, you know, messing with grips for that curveball and messing and throwing, you know, when I was back home in that summer, you know, I was just wearing my dad's ankles out, just throwing him curveballs, you know. But that pitch, I think, changed everything for me my last year at Indiana. I was able to come back with that pitch. And actually, when I was back home for the summer, still rehabbing and working on stuff, and I went back up to Dominic Johnson's house and to throw some bullpens when I wasn't clear to throw off the mound yet, but I didn't tell anybody. Jerome Williams was there. He was in the big leagues for a while, and he was playing with the Angels at that time. And he threw a bullpen right before me, and he taught me how to throw his cutter that he threw. And it was a pitch that came super easy to me for some reason. And it, you know, it kind of just learning that kind of just added even more to my, you know, my game as a pitcher. So, you know, if I wasn't hurt and if I didn't go through all that, I wouldn't have learned any of that. So for that, I'm so thankful that that happened, because I came back my last year at IU for my fifth year. And I was just, you know, I felt so much more polished as a pitcher. I felt so much more complete, and I felt, you know, like every time I was on the mound, like I had, you know, that I had the opportunity to get this hitter out, you know, and I never doubted myself one time. So I think learning that, and obviously adding that stuff to my game, changed everything for me. And, you know, like I said, I'm thankful thankful for the process of that injury, and I'm thankful that that happened, because without that, I wouldn't have ever been the pitcher that I am, you know, at this moment.
One final thing I'd like for you to touch on is, you know, your time at IU was split between Sim Bauer and Bart Kaufman Field. Can you talk about how that, from a player's perspective, how that transition from Sim Bauer to Bart Kaufman, how that that improved, you know, the team and the program?
Yeah, you know, it's crazy to think how big of a transition that was for our team as a group. A lot of people kind of overlook, you know, the class that came before us. They were actually supposed to, the timeline, they were supposed to play on that field. They didn't get a chance to. But, you know, that actually those guys that played on those teams when I was younger, and then we played at the Sandbauer, the Matt Carrs, Drew Leninger's, you know, the Micah Johnsons, all those guys, you know, I think that those guys instilled such a championship culture and such a professional culture just right off the bat. And I think those guys have they played such a huge role into the culture that we embedded in those winning teams. So, you know, I always go back to when I was younger, and I'm so thankful that we had that group, you know, like had a couple more guys, Blake Monar, Josh Lyon, like those guys, they were so mature, and they, you know, they had such a sense of professionalism to them, you know. So when we came in, when my class came in my freshman year, it was like, you know, we got checked at the door, like real quick, like no ego. We knew our place as freshmen, you know. Granted, when we go out in the field, we could go, you know, be ourselves for sure. But, you know, everyone knew their place, and they instilled such a great culture. So I think that goes even further to when, you know, we transitioned from Sembauer to Bart Kaufman. We still had that chip on our shoulder. Like, we still played for those guys. You know, we wanted to do right by those guys and, you know, make them proud and, you know, kind of, you know, keep them in our thoughts, because, you know, those guys meant so much to us because they're our teammates. And, you know, we grinded with them every day. So, like, you know, we went from, in 1 year, we went from sweeping dugouts in Sembauer and getting called at 1 a.m. to do a tarp pull, and then all of a sudden going to Bart Kaufman the next year, you know? So honestly, man, it was a crazy transition. And that stadium, you know, so special, man. It meant so much to me personally. It meant so much to our team. You know, we felt like we kind of finally, you know, belonged at that university, you know, belonged as a sport, or like a bona fide sport on that campus now. So that had so much to do with kind of, you know, the swagger that we played with that year, the confidence, just, you know, everything that we brought to the table that year, that stadium had so much to do with. So, you know, I'm so grateful for, you know, how that all went down and the timing of it. But at the same time, I'm so grateful for Sembauer, because, you know, you play there and then you realize how lucky you are to play at a place like Bart Kaufman. So you don't take anything for granted at all. You know, we got flat screen TVs, we got a big league locker room, you know, we got all these amenities. Like, it's crazy, man. It's such a beautiful facility, and, you know, it just keeps getting better and better with that new video board and all the little touches they're doing on it. When I was just back there this fall, I, you know, got to see it. It's just an incredible place to play college baseball, man.
Well, Ryan, we really appreciate you being our guest on the podcast and catching up with us. And thank you for your time and reliving these moments with us.
Oh yeah, I just want to thank you guys for real, because throughout our time at IU, you know, you guys always, you know, keeping track of us and, you know, doing what you guys do really meant a lot to us, and it helps us feel connected even after being alumni. It helps us still feel connected to the program, and I appreciate you guys. It was great being out. It was fun.
Thank you. And that'll do it for this special edition of Talking Hoosier Baseball. Read up on Indiana baseball at iubase.com. Follow us on Twitter at CUatTheBart and at iubase17. Please leave us a review on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. For Carl James, Josh Bennett, Chris Feeney, and Ryan Halstead, I'm Casty Palmer. See you at the BART. Thank you.